The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Okay, so we'll get started. So welcome to Happy Hour. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Diana Clark. And Nikki Mirgafuri and I kind of alternate on teaching this on Wednesday evenings. It doesn't always work perfectly that it's alternating. Sometimes I'm out of town and sometimes Nikki's out of town. Sometimes we have substitute teachers, but otherwise, in general, that's what we're doing. And as it's near the beginning of the year, I thought I would just kind of talk a little bit about some of the basics of loving kindness. What it is and why we cultivate it or practice it. So in some ways we can talk about loving kindness as being a quality of mind, a quality of heart. We don't even have to make a distinction between mind and heart, or we can. Whichever feels most accessible or matches your experience. Sometimes they may feel like there's a difference, and maybe sometimes there isn't. But loving kindness is an intentional, emotional stance of goodwill, benevolence, kindness, kind-heartedness, love, care, respect, warmth, openness. Maybe I could come up with some more words. Maybe you have your own words about this. Maybe as you practice, you'll discover some of these words. And part of the reason, there's lots of reasons to practice loving kindness. One is to increase our capacity for love, warm-heartedness, increase the ease in which it arises. Instead of waiting for the perfect conditions in order for us to feel love, the right person, behaving in the right way, and we're in the right mood, and, you know, instead of waiting for that, we can cultivate loving-kindness and make it more likely that loving-kindness will arise and that we'll experience it. And it's less susceptible to the vagaries of our experiences and how other people are behaving. Instead, it increases our capacity to feel love, warmth, care, respect in all kinds of conditions, with the ultimate goal of being able to feel that in all conditions, wherever we are, with whomever we're interacting. It's a tall order. And we always start where it's easiest, and we always start where we are. There's no need to think that we have to be somewhere else having other experiences. We're having the experiences we're having, and that's exactly where we start. But not only does loving kindness increase our capacity for love, it also cleanses our minds in some kind of way, cleanses our hearts in some kind of way. That is, when we're experiencing loving kindness, there's a certain type of openness, spaciousness, and warmth. It's nice to have that experience and to make decisions with an open, spacious, warm place, to meet the world, to meet individuals from that place. But also importantly, when we're experiencing loving kindness, we're not experiencing ill will, malice, hatred, or hatred's a strong word, but, you know, something along that line. Like many of us know that whatever we do repeatedly kind of inclines the mind to have those experiences again. In the same way, whatever we don't do is a little bit less likely to have those experiences again. So in these times when we're experiencing loving kindness, We're helping kind of cleanse our minds, cleanse our bodies of some any malice that might be there or ill will. Right, certainly there are a lot of things wrong in this world. I'm not saying that there aren't. What I am saying is that attacking the things we don't like with malice always leads to harm in the long run. Instead, if we can meet those things, some of those things that are wrong, quote unquote, in the world with a heart that is open and spacious, then the best version of ourselves, the greatest wisdom that we have, can help guide us and to work with those things that are difficult and troubling. So in this way, loving kindness practice is kind of an antidote to hatred. Again, hatred's a strong word. I wish I could think of a word that's on that spectrum, but not that strong. But we can think of it as a spectrum. Sometimes this kind of just pushing away, shoving away, and I don't know, this just not wanting to be toward, be with or address. So with loving kindness practice, both increasing our capacity for love and cleansing our minds and bodies and hearts, is transformational. It really is. It's quite remarkable. I can speak from my own experience, kind of the softening, the opening, the warmth that arises much more readily now than before I started practicing. I'm not saying this is an immediate transformation, but it works. This does, practice does kind of like enhance our life in this way. And not only our lives, right, but the lives of people around us, if we're showing up in this with respect and care and openness. So this practice, which I'm about to describe a little in a moment, but it asks us to first evoke and then sustain, as best we can, this a benevolent attitude, a intention of goodwill, a wish for warm-heartedness. So we practice in order, we create the conditions in which that warm-hearted feeling might arise. We are not forcing anything to happen. We're not trying to make anything happen. It may arise, it may not arise too, and that's okay. The practice works whether or not you're having any particular experience. If you're feeling blissed out and loving everybody, that's fantastic. If you're feeling like, I don't know, I just can't get into this. I want to send loving kindness to this person, but my mind, it keeps on slipping off, and I'm still agitated by what happened earlier in the day. That's okay too. Or maybe you have the intention for loving kindness, and then instead of loving kindness, what arises is all those times you've not been loving or kind. Instead, you start to like feel reminded of all those experiences, or maybe experiences you've had when other people have not been loving or kind towards you. That's okay too. We're just creating the conditions, and what arises, arises, and we'll work with it or be with it, and it's part of the practice. You don't have to, again, you don't have to have one particular experience. We're just inclining the mind, creating the conditions. So we start practicing loving kindness by first focusing on a beloved person, or maybe it's a beloved pet, or maybe it's even a beloved idea of kittens and babies and puppies. We start where it's easiest. There's no reason, absolutely no reason, to start where it's difficult. So for some people, where it's easiest is someplace where you already know, where you kind of have this inner smile, there's this opening of the heart, a sense of warm-heartedness. Start there. And then we're just use that as to cultivate that and maybe stoke the fire a little bit and maybe it grows. But we use that as a foundation. Again, we're not trying to force anything or absolutely make something to happen. And then after connecting with the beloved and potentially having a greater sense of loving kindness, then we'll increase our sphere of loving kindness to include ourselves. It's not uncommon for people to have a little bit more difficulty with this, loving kindness for ourselves. We may be used to being critical and beating ourselves up, thinking that if we're harsh to ourselves, somehow we'll behave better. There's plenty of data to show this doesn't work, but it doesn't stop us from doing it. It's often a habit, lifelong habit, to just be critical of ourselves. So doing loving kindness for ourselves can help us kind of soften that habit, and eventually it can go away with sustained practice. But also it can be really beneficial just to simply see ourselves as just another person. Just like everybody else who deserves loving kindness, we do too. And maybe just look at ourselves a little bit more objectively instead of subjectively. Of course we can do both, but to start to see ourselves in a way of, yeah, just like everybody else, I deserve loving kindness. I can cultivate loving kindness here. This kind of a stance supports healing and transformation. Instead of being like right in the middle of, oh, I can't feel this way because I did this or I did that. It's like, no, loving kindness can be here as well, just like everywhere else. Kind of like maybe softens and encourages a little bit less of this kind of self-obsession that we often have. And then towards a little bit of the end of our practice, I'll introduce a little bit about equanimity. That is this feeling of seeing the big picture or feeling of balance or warm-heartedness, even though things are not going the way that match our preferences. This can be really powerful. And it's one thing that I love about equanimity practice is that we can practice it in one arena, and then as the mind and the heart start to kind of soften and maybe expand with equanimity, the equanimity bleeds out to all areas of our lives. So we can practice it maybe where it's easiest, and then it affects all different areas. Just like loving kindness, we start where it's easiest and then that expands and affects all other areas. So again, we don't have to start where it's the most difficult. We're just cultivating this quality of the mind and the heart that then affects all of our lives, all areas of our lives. Okay, so with that is maybe a little bit of a long-winded introduction. I won't necessarily always be this long on happy hours. Just at the beginning of the year, I felt obliged somehow to say a little bit more. So now I'll describe a little bit the loving kindness practice, and then we'll do some. So in this practice, there are three elements. And you may find that one element is the more accessible to you. Perfect. Go with that one. Emphasize that one. And just maybe keep the other ones kind of in the back of your mind. There may be a time when they are more accessible. So the first element is to bring to mind somebody or some being for whom you'd like to extend loving kindness. Often we do this by visualization. There's no need for this visualization to be crystal clear. Or maybe you can do it with a felt sense, whatever way you understand that, however that makes sense for you, of that other being. So that's the first element. The second element is the physical sensations that are happening in the body. They're often, not always, often some sense of warm-heartedness or some spaciousness or tenderness, however you might feel that. I'm putting like my heart center, but sometimes it's also in the belly or maybe even the throat or the face, maybe different places in the body. The second element is bodily sensations. The third element are phrases that we'll use to help us, help the mind to stay with our intention. And I'll be saying phrases out loud that you can silently repeat. And then there'll be some silence where you can go at your own pace and perhaps change the words. Yes. Yeah, so I'll speak to this in just a minute for whom we are directing the loving kindness. Maybe I'll just start right now. So we're going to start with, sometimes we use this word benefactor, somebody for whom it's the easiest. Somebody for whom you just naturally have this sense of warm-heartedness. And this usually means that you have an uncomplicated relationship with them, which usually means you may not know them well. Not always. Right, so it may be a spiritual leader for whom you've never met. It may be a historical figure. It, for whomever, that kind of, you know, you feel inspired by, or you feel tremendous respect for, or love and care. For me, one person I'm thinking about is somebody for whom I've heard a tremendous number of his teachings, but I've never actually met him. But I feel so touched by his teaching, so I sometimes like to send loving kindness his direction. So we'll start with the benefactor, and then we'll move on to the self, to ourselves. So let's take an alert, upright posture, and a posture that includes some ease. It's hard to cultivate loving kindness when the body is in physical pain. So you're welcome to use any combination of chairs, cushions, pillows, whatever's needed. And if you need to shift your posture, you're welcome to do that as well. And then we'll start with three long, slow, deep breaths. Just as a way to connect with the body, connect with the present moment. And sometimes with the exhale, there can be some letting go, some softening. To support some settling and relaxation, be helpful to just very softly, gently place our attention on different areas of the body. Sometimes just that simple movement of the attention can allow some letting go, softening. You can check in with the area around the eyes. The jaw, maybe the face in general. Our faces are very expressive, and sometimes it's a place where we hold tension unknowingly. The shoulders, letting the shoulder blades slide down the back. The upper back, the lower back. The chest. See if there can be some opening, softening. And the belly. Check in with the arms. And the hands. Maybe feeling the pressure of whatever the hands are touching. Just allow them to relax and be supported. Feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion against your body, letting gravity hold you down. Just enough energy, uprightness to hold you upright without being ramrod straight or too relaxed, too slumped. the legs. And the feet, feeling grounded. Then we'll begin with a little bit of mindfulness of the sensations of breathing. That is, you can bring your mind to the movement of the abdomen, the movement of the chest, or the feeling of air going in and out of the nose. Whichever one of those three areas feels the most vivid, the most accessible, the most relaxing. Very simply, gently rest your attention on the sensations of breathing. It wouldn't be surprising if the mind started to drift away and get lost in thought. It doesn't have to be a problem. Just very simply, gently, bring your mind back to the sensations of breathing. If you find yourself lost in thought, just very simply begin again. So this practice, mindfulness of the sensations of breathing, can always be a refuge or a foundation for your practice. That is, if you ever feel overwhelmed or confused or lost, or for whatever reason loving kindness meditation doesn't feel right, you can come back to this practice, just resting your attention on the sensations of breathing, very simply. And then to begin the loving kindness practice, first bring to mind a lovable being. Visualize them, or maybe have a felt sense of them. You might check in with the body, with the heart, the belly. Is there a warm-heartedness? Is there a softening, a spaciousness, an inner smile in some way? When you bring this being to mind, and then to cultivate loving kindness, to support our intention to cultivate loving kindness, to help create the conditions for loving kindness, you can silently repeat the phrases after me while keeping the individual in mind. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May want to check in with the body, the felt sense of your experience, and see if there's a growing openness, spaciousness. Perfectly fine if there isn't, but there might be. And if so, you can allow it to grow, and perhaps you can dip into it occasionally and allow it to support your intention for cultivating loving kindness. And you're welcome to modify the phrases to something that perhaps is a little more resonant for you. And of course, it doesn't have to be in English. It can be in any language, the language of your heart. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Maybe bringing to mind the benefactor, kind of refreshing the connection. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Now I'll be silent for a little bit, so you can go at your own pace. Maybe you'll emphasize the phrases, maybe the felt sense in the body, maybe the visualizing or somehow feeling connected to the lovable being. Now to expand our loving kindness practice and to build on this foundation, we'll direct loving kindness to ourselves in just the same way. Of course we deserve loving kindness, of course we do, just like everybody else. Just like everybody else. So you can bring yourself to mind, either visualizing yourself as you are today, or some people like to do it as a younger version of themselves, even when they were children, toddlers. Or maybe it just feels more accessible to tune into your felt experience here and now. Whichever is most accessible, perhaps which is ever the most vivid, or whichever feels the most supportive, you can experiment with this. And again, you can check in with the body and see if there's been some movement or a shift or any change with this, even the idea of going from the beloved, lovable being to oneself. If there's any feeling of warm-heartedness, just allow it to get as big as it would like. Again, we're not forcing anything. We're not making anything happen. We're just creating the conditions for loving kindness to arise. And for ourselves, we just simply change the pronoun and the phrases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Now I'll be silent for a bit. Notice any feelings of happiness or well-being, or any feelings of resistance that come up. You can allow them all to be there. Include them as part of our experience. See if you can stay connected to yourself, to your heart, in whatever way makes sense for you. That will expand our practice to include someone with whom there's a little bit of tension in the relationship. Not the most difficult person, not the most difficult relationship. We're not going to start there. But just to help us cultivate some equanimity, I'm just going to introduce a tiny little pebble into the oyster. So you can bring to mind somebody for whom there's just a little bit of tension. And to help support a feeling of equanimity, ease, balance, kind of seeing the big picture, being able to step back. We'll use a different phrase. So again, bringing this person to mind. You can repeat silently in your mind. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. So now I'll be silent for a bit. You can do whichever practice feels might be the most supportive. Maybe it's going back to working with the beloved, lovable being, or it's the easiest. Maybe it's mindfulness of breathing. Whichever practice feels like the right one, for whatever reason. And then to end this meditation, feel the pressure of the chair or the cushion against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So to support the cultivation, the growing, the development, the arising of loving kindness, we did a series of practices there. We started with just some general relaxation, then mindfulness of breathing, just bringing the awareness to the sensations of the movement or the chest moving. Working with a lovable being, sending that person good vibes, so to speak. Then expanding that to include ourselves, recognizing that we're a being too. And then we did some equanimity. Sometimes that can be helpful to help us stay balanced and clear about our responsibilities and other responsibilities as part of loving others, taking care of others. So all of these practices, either single or either alone or as a combination, can really support a sense of openness, spaciousness, warm-heartedness, and some sense of well-being. The well-being may not be your dominant experience, it may not be screaming for attention, it may just be a little corner of your experience. But if it arises, allow yourself to be nourished by that, to be supported by that. The more and more that we can kind of like dip into and use these as a resource, the more they can support our lives. And our life can then start becoming more and more from a place where we're connected to ourselves and connected to others. And then life just unfolds in a, I don't know, a more pleasant and easier, more wise, has a little more freedom. Peace, all kinds of good stuff. So now I'd like to open it up to some questions or comments. You can either share an experience that you had, you can ask a question about some of these practices or how they relate to one another or something in particular that happens. And if you could use a microphone, that would be great. So are there any questions or comments? Yeah, so in the back. So, thank you, Jim. Jim just showed up and volunteered. It would be nice to use the microphone. Jim didn't realize he was going to be doing this when he arrived this evening, so thank you. I appreciate it.
Like an ice cream cone. Is this working?
It doesn't sound like it's working. Is it turned on? I think that Jim has
Hello.
To turn it on up here.
Echo. Yeah,
there we go.
Hi. Thank you for the lesson. I guess I struggle with situations where a person, well, it can be a stranger, or it could be somebody I love, but they are expressing evil. they are, for example, supporting an evil public policy or... they have opinions that I find evil and dangerous. And it's two things. First, you know, I have a revulsion to their this expression of evil, whatever it is. I don't know. I'll give you a generic example.
You don't have to give an example.
You get the point, yeah. Like supporting a bad politician or something. Not that I have to name any names. Ha ha. But, It either feels like a revulsion or it feels actually dangerous, because if you support this, you're sort of allowing it to continue in a way and maybe it's unreasonable, but there feels like a responsibility to say, no, this is bad, in the same way that I would speak up if someone says something racist or something like that. So it both, like, I don't want to love this person, and also it feels kind of dangerous to love this person. Logically, I understand why that's flawed, but it's feeling-wise, it's very difficult to get past that.
Yeah, yes. So I have a few things to say. One is, loving-kindness is not passivity. It's not just rolling over and accepting, like, oh, rainbows and unicorns, everything's beautiful, right? It's not that. It's about kind of cultivating something in our hearts and minds, this openness and spaciousness and warmth. And from that place, when we are feeling some spaciousness, then our best versions of ourselves and the best wisdom that we have can arise. And from that place, we can interact or deal with injustice, evil, quote-unquote, and all kinds of difficult people. But to deal with the difficult people from, to start loving-kindness practice there, I don't even know if that's possible. We first kind of have to cultivate it. We have to build this and work with it. And so often that's why we start with a lovable being, is so that we get a sense of what does it feel like to have some openness and spaciousness and warm-heartedness. What does it feel like to not be contracted and really concerned with what these other people are doing? And then once we have that feeling and we can recognize the kind of the wisdom and the care that comes from that place, then it's a little bit easier to get to that place and then be able to be really effective in how we are interacting in the world with all the injustices and the difficulties and things that are wrong in the world that definitely need us to pay attention to and to do something with. But it's very difficult to start with loving kindness for the difficult people. That's classically the tradition teaches that's the very last place that person.
But then what do you do when you encounter it day to day?
So there's a few things you can do. One is like very practical, is to kind of get grounded in yourself and realize what can you do then in terms of not spinning out and losing your own kind of presence of mind and losing your own balance. Some obvious things or simple things. To feel your feet on the ground. It's very mundane, very effective. Just to kind of like, oh, here and now. And it's also, there's something about being grounded, feeling grounded, as which is a good antidote to spinning out of this person's doing this and then this other thing's going to happen and I need to do this and that person didn't do that. And right, and then we can kind of get lost and we can just spin around in there, maybe not see the best way, the most effective way to respond. So one is to feel your feet on the ground. Another is to have some compassion for ourselves, to notice the difficulty, how we get ignited or agitated and feel really uncomfortable with some of these things. And can we kind of find a way in which, like, okay, I'm agitated right now. And for maybe to help kind of take care of ourselves, to soothe ourselves in a little bit, not in a way that we're trying to repress or suppress anything, but instead to turn towards our own experience. I'm feeling really agitated. I feel really uncomfortable. And sometimes just that recognition can help us be, again, a little bit more grounded and be with the reality of the moment that we're feeling that way. And then when we're back again in the moment and what's happening, again, that creates the condition for some wisdom to arise about how to address what is happening. So here's two things, feeling our feet on the ground, and also just to recognize, it can be really helpful just to name verbally in our minds our own experience. In that place, then we are, can be more, have more wisdom and some more heart, as opposed to having our heart contracted and spinning in our minds. Was that helpful?
Yeah. There's sort of the longer term of, you know, you have a relationship with somebody that could be a friend or a sibling or whatever. So it's not in the moment of, do I yell back at them or do I yell at them for having expressed this opinion or something. In the longer term, it's tricky to navigate that relationship. It's someone you love, but they've shown you this component that feels very evil. It's hard to navigate that.
It sure is. And this is where equanimity can help. I wish you happiness, but I cannot make your choices for you. This is a practice to be able to recognize, oh, I can influence myself. All of us do this, right? It's part of the human condition. We want others to behave in a particular way. We want them to do different things, and it most often doesn't work, right, when we're trying to do this. And then the relationship gets a little tangled up, and these extra things get inserted into the relationship. But if we can keep our warm-heartedness, our open-heartedness, I wish you happiness, and to recognize that we cannot make them make different decisions for them. We can create the conditions, maybe, in which they may choose to make different decisions, right? I don't know what those conditions are. This is something that we know when we're in relationships, what those conditions are. But equanimity is a powerful and sometimes very necessary practice. Some people are nodding their heads here. It's part of what it means to be in a relationship is to recognize, right, that the other people don't change the way that we wish that they would.
I just wanted to add that for me, the fact that the issue that you talked about is political or social, it feels pretty much the same as when you're in a relationship with somebody that you want them to operate from a place of integrity and they don't, or any other difference of opinion. The phrase about I wish you happiness, but I can't make your choices for you really is of great impact for me in so many ways with so many people. Their choices or behaviors are not what I would like them to choose, but I want to continue having some affinity or affection for those people.
Yes, right? Of course we want them to have happiness. Can you imagine if some of these people, evil, quote-unquote, don't have happiness? They're more apt to be out there doing harm, right? The more happiness they have, the more apt they are to make different decisions. So it's part of one way to kind of influence what's happening out there is to wish happiness, allow people to have happiness. Happiness is unlimited. It is completely unlimited. Just because they're happy doesn't mean we're going to have less happiness or something like that, right? We wish them as much as they can have. And then things will change. So it's 7 o'clock. So I'll stay up here if you have some more comments or questions. Otherwise, I wish you all happiness and well-being. Thank you.